Well, hello and welcome to the Advisor Pack monthly session. I'm Mark Little. Every single month we get together to go through, well, the Advisor Pact pledge and all the modules that go with it. Those of you that are new to the Advisor Pact monthly program, what the Advisor Pact pledge is a promise to each and every one of your ideal clients that pledges what ends up being the four client expectations. Now, PACT represents an acronym: protection, attention, coordination, transparency. The very first module that we have provided you with, and you'll always have access to, is the essentials of the Advisor PACT method. And so what you need to do is go through and understand how these four promises radically differentiate you from every other advisor out there. So if there are clients out there that are seeking truly comprehensive financial services, then your biggest challenge is going to be that they don't believe that you can actually, that you're able and willing to deliver on these four things. The problem in the current environment is that there are millions of multimillionaires out there who have given up on the idea of finding an advisor who's able and willing to deliver on these four promises. So as you launch into this and start doing a deep dive into what we're talking about in this program, you owe it to yourself to go through the very first module in this program over and over and over again until you can make the Advisor Pact pledge to a client in a way, in a skillful way, and you've mastered the ability to persuade anyone that you talk to that you're passionate about delivering on these four things. Because when potential clients realize that you're the only advisor who's able and willing to deliver on these four things, well, you'll be the only game in town. And my experience is that once given a chance, if you establish the team goal that we talk about in this program, then you will be indispensable to every one of your ideal clients. Not only will you acquire clients faster than you ever have before, but you will retain those clients forever. There's no way that a client would ever consider leaving you. And so that's what we talk about each and every month. What we do as far as the format for this session is, In between the month, while you're going through the module that we send you each month, you send us your questions. And so this is your opportunity for live coaching. You show up here to this session each and every month, come prepared with your question that you submitted to us. And if I don't choose to cover it, it's not that we're not willing to cover your question. It's that I have selected something that I thought is maybe a better question for more advisors. So each and every month, I go through all the questions and I hand select the one that I think will benefit the most of you. And so, so this month, I've selected two questions that we're going to cover, but that doesn't mean that we have to limit ourselves to these two. So I'm going to go through these two questions. And as I go through them, you'll see why I thought they were interesting and useful for everyone. But as we go through this, if you've got a question that you've submitted that you'd like for us to cover, then speak up. You can raise your hand. You can submit your question to me during this session. And I will keep an eye out for those questions as they come over the transom. And, you know, take advantage of this. If you're struggling with something, and it doesn't have to be just with the content of what we're teaching, it could be any issue related to your practice. I'll promise you this. If I have not encountered whatever your problem is or your question or your obstacle, I'll be honest and I'll tell you. But listen, after 40 years of being in this business and being top producer and Bill Bacharach's poster child. It's just so rare that we come across a question that I haven't dealt with. And just look at it this way. I have made all the mistakes over the years, so you don't have to. So if I have encountered something that you're struggling with, give it a shot. See, it could be a client issue. It could be a staff issue. It could be anything that you're dealing with. But with that, let's dig into the questions that I selected for this month. All right, so we had an advisor. I ended up calling this guy. The basic gist of it was that he's having too many initial client interview reschedules. So now, just a little background on this initial client interview question. So I often get advisors asking me, "What's the difference? Why do you call it an initial client interview? Don't you utilize the financial roadmap as your initial client interview?" And the answer is yes. But would you be surprised to learn that about a third of the advisors that join the Advisor Pack monthly program don't use the financial roadmap, and not for any other reason than they've never heard of it before? So the reason I trademarked the initial client interview is because it has some essential elements that need to be the case. And so there are some things that you can use whatever initial client interview process that you want to use, but know this, there are some things that should be in place in your initial client interview for it to be effective. So we have 15 essential elements of an effective initial client interview. It just so happens the financial roadmap beautifully delivers on all 15. So if your initial client interview is not the financial roadmap, or if for any reason they're not, your initial client interview is not effective, in other words, not converting individuals who meet your ideal client profile, not converting them into actual paying ideal clients, well, then you need to ask me about the 15 essential elements of an initial client interview, and we'll go over those. I've gone through them before in past webinars, but this always seems to come up as an issue. But this particular advisor is using, just like I have, and still do use the financial roadmap, that his initial client interview was the financial roadmap. And he was telling me, "I've had a large number of scheduled financial roadmaps reschedule, and they keep rescheduling." Okay. So imagine this: you schedule an initial client interview with a client who wants to sit down and talk business with you, and they reschedule. Okay, no big deal. And then they reschedule again, and then they reschedule a third time, and then they reschedule a fourth time. And I asked this advisor, "How many people have rescheduled?" And at least twice. And he said, 8. And I'm like, okay, that's a problem. So let's go through this step by step. If you're ever having, and you see why I thought it was an interesting question, because, this is not normal. I mean, this is something that, needs to be addressed. And I thought, if you ever encounter, any of you out there encounter this situation where you are, scheduling an initial client interview and they just keep rescheduling over and over, what do you do? All right. So the starting point for this, and this is what I recommend, and this is, by the way, one of these weird topics that kind of it falls on the line between client acquisition and client service. So the Advisor Pack monthly program is all about client service. So just so you know, that's what this program is all about, client service. It's about consistently exceeding ideal clients' expectations. And so much so that this program promises that the outcome of implementing this program is unsolicited client referrals. So there are very, very few programs that I've ever encountered that even teach referrals. And if they do, they teach referrals from a standpoint of scripting that, you know, they take the approach that if you're not getting referrals, it's because you're not asking for referrals. So this program is different in that we're not teaching you scripting on referrals. We're teaching you how to deliver at such a high level to your clients that you don't even if you didn't ask for referrals, you would get them. In other words, what would it be like if you're delivering at such a high level for clients, so far and above their exceeding their expectations, that frankly, when the subject of money comes up, when they're out in the wild interacting with their friends and colleagues and associates and whatever, when the subject of money comes up, you know, they just can't resist telling everyone that they know about you. It's not like they're thinking about you 24/7. No, that's ridiculous. But I'm saying when the subject of money comes up, you know, is your face the first thing that pops into their mind? And do they tell, if somebody's telling them, oh, I'm having a significant financial issue, you know, I'm getting a divorce, or I'm buying a business, or I just had an inheritance, or, you know, any significant financial issue, something that's foremost on their mind. Is it, if it's in a conversation with your client, is the immediate, you know, like knee-jerk reaction of your client to say, well, you need to call Mark. I mean, you're crazy if you don't call my advisor. My advisor's, you know, exceptional. And so that's the purpose of this program, that, you know, to develop unsolicited client referral, a constant stream of unsolicited client referrals. And I'm not saying don't ask for referrals. Bill Bachrach corrected me on that 20 years ago. He said, Mark, you're crazy not to have the referral conversation. And so he twisted my arm and convinced me that it was smart. But I'm telling you, long before Bill Bachrach twisted my arm that it's good business to have the referral conversation, which in our program we call the References Project. So even when I ask for referrals, I'm not asking for referrals. I'm asking if they'd be willing to serve as a reference. But the point is, this is the only program that exists in the financial services industry that focuses on developing and a constant stream of unsolicited client referrals. So back to this issue of rescheduling. The starting point, if people are rescheduling a lot on your initial client interview, it's going to come back to this issue of there are two rules that need to be enforced prior to the initial client interview. Now, this may be something that's very familiar to you because you've been working in our program for quite some time, or this may be the first time you've ever heard of it. If this is the first time you've heard of the two rules, I'm going to cover them, and I'm going to cover them because the key to this not rescheduling starts with always confirming the two rules three times. And I could say a minimum of three times, but the reality is in most cases for me, it's three times. So you confirm three times in advance, and then you enforce the two rules live at the initial client interview. So what are they? The two rules are critical to the initial client interview success. The two rules are, I need both of you there, and I need you to bring all your financial documents. All right. So the way it's described, you know, to the potential client is when you schedule the meeting, you say it's important that both of you attend, and I'll need you to be able to share all of your financial documents. So you'll need to bring all your financial information and documents with you to the meeting. And, you know, so does everybody just say, yeah, sure, no problem? Well, I would say probably the majority, yes. I mean, this is one of these things where advisors tend to worry a lot about issues that never actually occur in the real world. I would say, you know, I don't track this. This is one of the very few things I don't track. So I'm kind of struggling to say. I would say most people do not push back on this. It makes sense to them. As far as both of you being there, what I do get, I don't get necessarily pushback, but occasionally I will get something like this. oh, my, I handle all the money. My spouse doesn't like money and finance. And so, you know, it'll just be me because, you know, my spouse has asked me to handle all this and they don't even want to be in the, they hate these meetings. Okay. So I do get that. And I explain that this meeting, you know, this meeting, well, first of all, something that you do, this is client acquisition that you have to know about me because some of you may be different on this. For me, I'm always meeting with people, I would say almost always, whenever they've got a significant financial issue. So I have orchestrated my client acquisition activities so that when somebody comes and wants to sit down and talk business with me, that's this initial client interview, almost always they'll have some significant financial issue, something that's motivating them to want to sit down and talk. Okay, so that's me. And that's important because if they're motivated to meet, you know, that's an important aspect of this. Well, what's the alternative? They're not motivated to meet with you. Well, then that could be a problem. All right. If they're not motivated to meet, then yeah, that could be a problem. So, but in my case, they all always have a significant financial issue. And that was also the case with this advisor. That's why I called him up. I said, so go through the eight with me. Do they have a significant financial issue or not? And four of them didn't. Okay. So they were not motivated to meet to begin with. All right. So that solved four of the eight. But for the ones that did have a motivation to come in and meet, then, you know, I explained to them, this is not like any money meeting you've ever had with anybody. This is not going to be exclusively about financial issues. What it's going to be is I'm going to ask you very high-level, open-ended questions about your future and about what's important. And you're married, right? And this is me talking to the potential client. They go, yeah, I'm married. We're married. And I'd say, okay, so, and you handle the finances, right? Yeah, I handle all the finances. But you would agree that marriage is a team effort, would you not? Oh, yeah. Marriage is a team effort. And you would agree that each of you has objectives and desires about how you want your future to unfold. In other words, you both have opinions about your future. Oh, yeah. Yep. We both have opinions about our future. Well, that's why I need you both there. It's not that we're going to be talking about money and the one of you that's not into the money stuff is going to be bored stiff. No, it's going to be a lively meeting and it's going to require both of you. In other words, we can't even conduct the meeting without you both being there. Why? Because marriage is a team effort and we need to know both of your perspectives on every issue that we bring up. And it's not going to be perspectives on money things. It'll be perspectives on everything that we bring up, some of which may have financial overtones for sure. But, you know, just to, you know, I'll assure you, they won't walk out of that meeting thinking, I don't know why I was there. I promise you, they will walk out of this meeting thinking I was glad I was at this meeting. I'm glad I didn't miss this one. So that's the issue on both of you. And then I honestly can't remember. I've conducted over 2,000 financial roadmaps. I do not actually remember anybody saying, why do I need to bring my financial documents? I'm not saying they didn't have concerns or objections about bringing documents. I'm just saying that I've never had anybody question why I'm asking for them. I mean, after all, if they have a significant financial issue and they're approaching a financial advisor, and that's what I do professionally, you know, what on earth would they think that they would do in this meeting if not discuss or review, or it's at least not unreasonable in their mind to think that I would at least be asking for them to bring their financial documents. So all I'm saying is, I'm not saying nobody has ever pushed back on financial documents. All I'm saying is I can't remember a single instance. So, but there are some issues that people do have around financial documents, and we'll get into it. So I said you confirm the two rules three times. Okay, so when is that? Well, the first time is when the appointment is scheduled. So when you're sitting down, just like we were talking right now about scheduling the appointment, that's when you confirm the two rules right then and there. And if they have any pushback, my prediction, if there's any pushback at all, it's going to be on that both of them need to be present. Okay, but you deal with that, right? Now, after we went through all of that, you feel skilled at addressing that, right? So if you have any questions here and now on this issue of you know, what some potential client might say about, you know, pushing back on this logic that I've just given you for marriage is a team effort, and I need you both there because I need both of your perspectives, it'll be important that you're both there. You know, if you're encountering something other than that, just put it in the chat or pose a question and we'll deal with it. But I'm telling you, it's very rare. And when I address it the way I just addressed it with you, never had any pushback that I can remember. Now, it's not that they've all complied. I'll get to that in a minute. There are people that are kind of playing a game with you, and I'll tell you how that happens later. But the second time is we email, actually in our case, we physically mail and email. So there's two confirmations that go out, but we send out a confirmation for the appointment. So, and we confirm those two rules in the email and the mail confirmation. So you send out a confirmation of the appointment and it includes the two rules in the confirmation. And then there is a phone confirmation to both spouses. My administrative manager does this, but it could be you. I recommend, you know, whatever you normally do for your appointment confirmation process. But the day before, my office always confirms these appointments. And while they're confirming this by phone, the two rules are reiterated. All right. So let's go through the two rules again and how we go through them on the confirmation. So you're confirming. So this is all three times. So when you're scheduling it right then and there with them, you do this. And then in the email and mail confirmation, if you do, you know, you should send out a confirmation by at least email. And then the phone confirmation the day before, we recommend that you do this procedure all three times. Okay. So you confirm the day, the date, the time, and the venue. And then you say, it's important that both of you attend and that you bring all of your final financial documents. Okay. So if it's when you're scheduling the appointment at the very first, you know, you're pulling your calendars out and you're scheduling an appointment, you're going to do this verbally. Okay. And then that would give them an opportunity. If they want to push back, they can. But in the email, then when you fire off an email confirmation, you just as you precede this sentence with just a reminder, it's important that both of you attend and that you bring all of your financial documents. And then in the email confirmation, you follow up by saying, oh, and if one of you can't make it, or if you don't have your financial documents, no problem. Just call and we will reschedule to another day. In other words, you're giving them an option. They either both show up with all their documents or they contact your office to reschedule. So it's not, you know, show up with one spouse and all your documents, or show up with all your documents, but, oh, you know, my spouse couldn't make it at the last minute. No. All three confirmations. The initial one, when you set it, the email or mail confirmation, and the phone confirmation that is conducted the day before the meeting, have both of these elements. It's important that, just a reminder, it's important that both of you attend and that you bring all of your financial documents. And if one of you can't make it, or if you don't have your financial documents gathered yet, no problem. Just call and we'll reschedule to another day. So it's either show up with everything or reschedule. All right. And by the way, that phone confirmation, just to say what I said a minute ago, it's to both spouses. So there needs to be a little effort. If let's say, and we're going to go into this here in a minute, but if you're dealing with one of the two spouses and you don't know the other spouse, very well, you will need to get contact information for the other spouse, email and mobile. And you're going to explain when you schedule the appointment, you know, that you will send out a confirmation to both of you and will confirm it the day before. So you're going to kind of let them know this is happening. So you're going to need to gather their spouse's, you know, email and mobile number just to so you can confirm it three times with both spouses. You follow me? Okay. So that day before, you know, the question we often get is, well, do we have to have my administrative manager keep calling each of the two of them until they actually connect? No, the way we do it is call the mobile number for each spouse. And if you get them, you get them. And then it's your administrative manager. You know, Mark said just to remember that it's important both of you attend and that you bring all your financial documents. But if either of you can't make it, or if you haven't been able to gather all your financial documents yet, no problem. Just let me know and I'll reschedule it. Okay. And so they either connect with the each spouse and say, and your either you or your administrative manager would say that, or leave a voicemail. So yeah, the question is, do you leave a voicemail? Yeah, sure. Of course. We live in an era of voicemail. So think about it. Now you're coming on the day of the initial client interview, in my case, financial roadmap experience with both spouses, and they show up. So I'm just telling you, if they have heard these two ground rules three times, compliance is going to be very, very high. But it could drive referrals. But before, reschedules. So, but before I get to the reschedules and how to deal with it, if they actually do take you up on the idea of rescheduling, then let me just say, just want to touch on this because I know advisors often think worst case scenario. So Mark, has anybody ever, after those three like ground rules being told to them three times, has anybody ever shown up just with one spouse or shown up without their documents? Yes, but let me tell you, it became obvious that that they are people you don't want to work with, at least in my case. It's only happened a handful of times. Like I said, I've conducted over 2,000 financial roadmaps, and we sat down a couple of years ago and tried to document, you know, the times when this has been a problem. I can only remember five times. They're very vivid to me because they were jerks. They showed up with a chip on their shoulder and they didn't care what my ground rules were. They were just going to do what they wanted to do. And I don't do business with assholes. And so, you know, it became obvious. I'll give you an example. One guy shows up and I said, you know, we're waiting for your spouse to arrive. No. She's not going to attend. And I said, well, when we talked initially and scheduled this appointment, I said, I need you both here. And then I specifically followed up two more times to make sure that that was clear. And he said, yeah, I know. But, you know, she adds no value to this conversation whatsoever. What she thinks doesn't matter to any of this. And at which point I am so like turned off that I am starting to rise with my hand outraised as he's saying these words. I mean, I was so irritated at the way he was like describing his spouse that I would not want to do business with this person anyway, who has such a low opinion of their own spouse. You know, this is never going to work. So I'm standing up, holding out my hand, shake, and he's, of course, putting his hand out to shake my hand. You know, what do you do when somebody puts their hand out to shake your hand? You shake it. So he's shaking my hand, and I go, listen, I understand. And have you ever had that feeling that just things aren't working out? I'm having that feeling right now. And, but you know, I appreciate you coming in, but it's just not going to work. This is not going to work. And he spent another sentence or two as I'm escorting him to the door. And, you know, now he's standing out in the hallway and, you know, he's trying to talk his way back into the conference room. and I just wouldn't have anything of it. But do you see what I mean? It becomes obvious. Same thing when they show up without their documents. It's like so when I confirmed these ground rules three times, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you do the right thing and just tell me I have a problem with that? Or, you know, give me a heads up. I can tell you, just between us, I would never conduct a financial roadmap without both rules. You know, so if they show up after three warnings of the ground rules, if they show up with kind of this screw you attitude, you'll know it when the time comes. You'll just politely disengage because there's something else going on, and it's usually that they're a jerk. Okay, so I politely disengage right then and there. If after three times they show up, you know, non-compliant. All right. So now back to the main question. What do you do if they kind of take you up on this? Okay. So if both spouses can't be there, or there is some problem with the financial documents, so they just take you up on that and they keep rescheduling. And in this case, you know, three and four times. All right. So here's some of the common rescheduling issues. Here's how you get ahead of this. So I'm sitting down with a friend of mine and I'm having a it's a personal relationship and I'm catching up with a friend and just out of the blue, I've had, you know, people want to sit down and talk business with me. Like I say, there's some significant financial issue. If I had one guy come up to me, we were on a board together and he just came up with me and he said, hey, my corporation is offering me millions of dollars to quit. You know, should I, and I have 30 days to decide whether I stay or whether I take the money, you know, and I don't know if I can afford to do it. And I'm like, great. We have a process for that. Love to schedule a time, but I need both you and your spouse there. And I need you to bring all your financial documents. He's like, okay, fine. But let me tell you that the issue that came up in that situation was, in that particular instance, he said, My wife, she's a vice president of her company, and she's so busy. Can't we just meet, you know, initially just you and me? And I clarified, no, we can't. If you're serious about this and you want to move fast, I agree it's a significant financial issue. But marriage is a partnership, right? And you both have a stake in this decision. And look, what you don't know is the questions I'm going to be asking, we need the perspective of both of you. It's not purely financial issues. You both have opinions about how your future's going to unfold. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. Okay. So I need you both there. And he's like, okay, fine. But I don't know when we're going to be able to coordinate a time. All right. So here's how. So the first issue is, and I'm just painting the picture for you, I'm dealing with one of the two spouses. Oftentimes, I've never even met the other spouse. Like, I don't even know them. I don't know if they're busy. I don't know if they hate money. I don't know what their issues are at all. That's very common. Okay, so we have this issue of, you know, in this case, he and I want to meet, talk business. He's ready to schedule this financial roadmap with me. But he just has no idea about his busy spouse, okay, and scheduling. All right, so here's how I deal with that. This is my most common technique. Let's book two scheduling options right now. So let's pull out our calendars. Let's pick two days and times. And I explain, you know, it takes 60 minutes to conduct this initial client interview, but let's book 90 minutes. I always book 90 minutes because, you know, who knows? Maybe she's going to have a lot of questions. So let's book nine. So let's book two scheduling options where you're available for 90 minutes. I'm available for 90 minutes. And then you can let me know which one is confirmed. Or if neither of those two work for her, then then do it the other way. Find two scheduling options that work for you and her, and just let me know, and I'll make one of them work. And I always say, I mean, you could say, and I'll try to make one of them work. I've never said that. I've always said, you give me two options, and I'll make one of them work. And thank God, I've always been able to make it work. Sometimes I have to move some things around, but, you know, But to make this work the best, we're going to take two bites at the apple. I'm going to book two scheduling options right now. You're going to clear those, pick one, let me know. Or if neither of those work, then the two of you pick two times and I'll make one of them work. And so there's a little bit of guilt there that, you know, if we do it this way, I'm proposing that, there's a little bit of a expectation that, you know, they're going to come back promptly with two additional times if these two don't work. Okay. So, and that usually works for me, but if they make a different issue an issue, like in that case, he was saying, she's just busy. She's just super, super busy. And usually it's presented that way. It's a scheduling dilemma. It's like, I don't know how to get all of our three calendars aligned. If that's the issue, if it's just purely scheduling, then this is what I do. If they say something a little bit different, as in, oh, my spouse just hates these kind of meetings. Can't we do it without them? And now you're realizing that, okay, this issue, this reason that they want to sit down and talk business is important to the person that you know, the one that's, it could be him or her, but it's important to whoever you're interacting with. But as far as the other spouse, maybe not so much. And maybe they've been down this road before where, you know nothing about their relationship or the dynamics of the relationship. Maybe the other spouse has had their arm twisted for meetings like this before. So you don't know what you're getting into. Maybe the other spouse just doesn't like the idea of meeting on anything because the other spouse booked it. It's like, you don't know what their reputation is internally in the marriage. So here's what I do. If I get any kind of an explanation that, oh, can't we do this without my spouse? And, I tend to handle all these kind of issues and they're trying to make a play for meeting with you alone. Then I say, let's do this. Let's book a time right now when you and I are available and you give me their contact information. And I always get their email and direct, their mobile. And I said, and give me their number and I'll either confirm it or I'll get back to you with a couple of times that work better for this spouse. And if so, in other words, I'm taking it off their hands of having to connect with the other spouse. Now you will predictably get a little pushback on this. And all I can tell you is, don't worry about it. Just stick to your guns and it almost always works. I mean, eventually they say, yeah, sure. I mean, they'll say, no, they don't even know what this is about. And I said, I know. Listen, I'm a professional. I've done this for years. I know what's happening here. It's an issue and you think it's important. And, and your spouse hates this kind of thing. And normally you handle these kinds of things. I got it. I got all of that. And I will make it clear how important it is that you both be here and why. And they can only hear that from me because we don't know what your spouse is going to ask or what kind of pushback or whatever there it is. But all I know is this. They're going to, if there is a chance that I call up to schedule this meeting and they just say, okay, fine. So when I say, hey, Bob suggested that I give you a call, we've scheduled a meeting and I promised that I would coordinate to see if that worked for you or if not, we reschedule. But, by taking it off their hands, I'm the one that gets to explain what we're doing here. And this is some advice that Bill Bachrach gave me years ago, but the financial roadmap is an experience. So don't explain it. Don't try to explain. You can't explain an experience. As Bill Bachrach says, you have to experience it. So don't try to explain to the other spouse what you're going to be doing. Just keep reiterating how important it is to the other spouse. Say, Bob and I have known each other a long time. Bob thinks this is really important. he's in a little bit of a corner because I'm requiring that both of you be present at this meeting. And it's because marriage is a team effort, and the kinds of questions I'm going to be asking, you're going to both have different opinions about. So it's really critical that you both be there. And when I explain how important their input is and how it's not, you know, at least my initial client interview, the financial roadmap is less about finance and more about what matters most. You know, this is where the other spouse can tell you what's really going on. If you're going to be the one to call the other spouse, be prepared. I mean, if there's something in the past where, you know, where the other spouse says, oh, they do this all the time to me. They schedule these meetings and they know I hate this stuff. And it's just, I can't tell you how many of these meetings I've sat through and just bit my tongue. And then I end up walking out angry or irritated. Like, why was I ever there? And that's where I can assure them, you will not leave this meeting thinking that way. You will walk out of this meeting just the opposite. You will walk out of this meeting being really glad you were there, that you're glad you didn't miss this meeting, because it was important that you contributed what you did. So that's my advice on that. So if you're having this rescheduling because it's coordinating with other spouse, these two techniques solve that for me. Okay. Let's talk about another common rescheduling issue, that gathering financial documents seems to be difficult for them. And you have to kind of get to the bottom of that. So if, let's say, they've called in and rescheduled with my administrative manager, which is what she kind of offered, like in the confirmation, you know, both in the email and in the phone, you know, the day before, the voicemail, where she's saying, you know, need you both there with all your documents. And if one of you can't make it, or if you can't find all your documents, that's fine. Just call me and we'll reschedule. So she reschedules, and then I'm calling to follow up the person that I know, usually same day or next day. You know, I'm calling. So I understand you rescheduled. That's fine. But I thought I'd just call and see what's happening. And that's where, if it ends up being the spouse thing and you haven't tried these two techniques before, you can take charge of that right then and there. So the point is, if anyone reschedules, follow up. You follow up. Like, not your administrative manager. I'm assuming with the administrative manager, they've already taken care of it and gotten a new date on the calendar for next week or week after or something like that. That's not the issue. What you're calling is just to check in. You're trying to see if there's any issues. And if it's the spouse and scheduling, you now have some tactics to use for that. If it's the financial documents, what do you do? Okay, well, try to figure out what the problem is. So I've had people say, well, I don't know what to bring. So you say, bring everything, Mark. What do you mean everything? And I said, if I sent you a checklist, would that help? And keep in mind, some of these things may not apply to you. So just bring what you have. And so if the issue is they don't know what you're wanting, then you could have a checklist. And by the way, and I've provided this in this webinar in the past, if you don't have a checklist and you need one, I'm happy to share the checklist that I've always used. But anyway, you could provide a checklist if they're not sure what to bring. Okay. If they're actually struggling pulling things together, like, you know, it could be a time management issue. If it is, you could offer to help them. So if they just say, I'm so busy, I just haven't gotten to it, I'll tell you what has been very effective with me is to threaten to come by and help them. And I've offered my administrative manager to go to their house and say, look, if it's going up to your attic and digging through your files or help you come to your office, you know, I can have my administrative manager come and, you know, hey, look, she's excellent at this. She does this all the time. I mean, she can dig through your files and help you find things quickly. Or why don't we just jump online and see what we can, let's book 20 minutes. not right now, but this is, again, me just following up to see how, why they rescheduled, but just say, why don't we schedule tomorrow? Do you have 20 minutes sometime? Let's just jump on a Zoom meeting and let's just pull up your various accounts and you can log in and we can go hunt for it. Maybe sometimes they just don't know that their statements, they know their statements are available online, but they've never done it before. Like they've just not taken the time. They're busy, you know, and they just haven't taken the time to pull it all together. A threat of a 20-minute Zoom meeting with me to go online together and find everything. Usually they'll say, no, I'll get it. I won't reschedule again. I've got this. You know, usually just the threat of me helping them is enough to push them across the line. And I say threat only because they realize how silly it is often, where they're just pushing it off for no real good reason. And the fact that you called to follow up, it's like asking, I used to ask my nephews and nieces for their report cards. And they're like, Uncle Mark, you want to see my report card? How come? And I said, because grades are important and your uncle would like to see your grades. And I got into a technique of that over the years because it matters that somebody else cares. You know, it does matter. And the fact that you took the time to follow up as to why the meeting is rescheduling, it shows that the meeting is important to you and you're taking their significant financial issue to the next, you're making it a big deal. And that matters. The fact that you're making it a big deal matters. And so the other thing that I do, and I listed it here, how about start off by getting a short list of what's easy to locate and what's hard to locate? Because oftentimes I'll follow up, you know, just, I saw that you rescheduled. I wanted to follow up and see what was going on. Oftentimes they'll say, well, I got some of it, but I don't have all of it. And I'm like, okay, great. Just give me the short list of what you have right now. Now, between you and me, you know, what they usually can put their hands on their tax return. Okay. They usually can put their hands on their bank statement. That's usually not a problem. And, you know, I just want to know what they have and what they don't have. So for my purposes, if they bring a tax return, a bank statement, and pretty much all their financial assets. So let's say they have a brokerage account or something like that. And they say, well, I got the brokerage account, I got my bank account, I've got my tax return, but I don't have my insurance policies. I've got some statement from, I think, my auto and homeowners. I don't have like my benefits from work, everything, because there's this big thing that describes all our benefits. So anyway, Mark, I have some of it, but not all of it. And by getting them to give me a short list of what they either have handy currently or what's easy to get their hands on, for me, you can be much stricter if you need to be. And not all of you are, you know, have a background like mine, which is pretty much on financial planning and investment advice. So, but, you know, for me, some of you out there are accountants, like CPAs, and your business is tax. So, you know, you may want them to bring 5 years of tax return. So I'm saying, look, you have your own standard. You can be as fussy as you want. I'm just telling you what I've done to fix this. If they have all their financial assets, in other words, if what everything they have that's going to fund a goal, they have, which often they do. It's their bank accounts, their investment statements, you know, and they might say, I own a business. Okay. That's another big one. It's like, and I've got a business valuation that we did a few years ago, but you know, I've got to get permission from my partners to share it with you. And at that point I'll say, I'm happy to sign a non-disclosure, but do you remember what the value was? And they'll say, yes. And because that's not the approach I take on business valuation anyway. Anyway, it's a long story. But if it's their business, I say, that's fine. Let's just schedule the meeting with what you've got. You got your tax return, you got your bank statements, you got your brokerage statements and your investments, your 401k. You've got all the stuff that pretty much funds your future goals, with the exception of the value of your business or some oddball, hard to mark to the market type asset, that's fine. Let's just go with what we've got. So that's what I call a blessing, where you just bless their current, what they've gathered. And in those cases, you're really, really good. Like, they probably didn't even really need to reschedule. But when you said, bring all your financial documents, they were thinking, you know, some of this stuff I'm going to have to go jump through flaming hoops in order to actually get pulled together. And by me looking at the list of what they have and saying, that's fine, we can, let's go with that. And then before we complete the meeting, we'll put a little plan together on how to chase down everything that's missing. Okay, that right there solves most of this. Now, let me deal with the third issue, and this is the bigger issue. What if they have all their documents? They're just not sure they trust you enough that they are willing to show them to you. What do you do then? So it through some sort of a conversation, you catch on. I get it. It's not that they can't gather all their financial documents. The issue is they haven't decided if they trust me enough to show me everything yet. In that case, I enforce the rule and issue them an assurance. I say, fine, totally understand. Let's do this. You bring all the documents with you. And let me promise you one thing. You'll be glad you did. Once you see how we get into these issues, we're going to come to a point in the meeting where if you did not bring, even for your own reference, all your financial documents, you're going to be sorry. And it's going to end up being a gigantic waste of time, because we could have handled in one meeting what would otherwise require subsequent meetings to get done. So let's do this. You bring the documents and let's defer on the decision as to whether you'll show them to me or not. Okay. But bring them anyway. And my assurance is, and I promise you, you won't regret it. You'll be happy that you have everything at your fingertips when the time came and the issues came up. And we're all there, you and your spouse. Now we need to deal with or address an issue. And I promise you, you'll be glad that you have all your documents. Okay. All right. Well, I'm playing a little bit of a tightrope there, because when we get to the point in the meeting, I'm still going to require it in the meeting. I mean, seriously, what's the point of talking to a financial advisor and not sharing the documents? All right. But let me tell you why I'm comfortable moving forward with this enforcement with assurance the way I just said it. It's because, I don't know about your initial client interview, but if you're utilizing the financial roadmap experience, the experience is compelling. And the experience is compelling to them, not you. So I have enough faith in my initial client interview, which is the financial roadmap, that after the first conversation, which if you're utilizing the financial roadmap, you know this is the values staircase, the values conversation. I am confident that after the values conversation with each of the two spouses, it's not going to be an issue. That when it comes time to go through the documents, they'll forget they ever didn't trust you. It has never happened in all the 2,000 financial roadmaps. Plus, it's closer to 3,000 than 2,000. So I've done so many financial roadmaps that there was never a time when, you know, if we get past the values staircase, which we always do, that they're not comfortable at that point. They've passed the point of trust that they want to share everything with me at that point. So it just required a little bit of an initial interaction to get them to that point of trust. Bill Bacharach says it all the time. You know, there is no better trust building exercise than the financial roadmap experience. You want to build trust with potential clients? Start asking them what's important. And that is the, I would say, the only trust training in our industry is from Bill Bacharach. And what he developed with that financial roadmap is nothing short of extraordinary. So I am gambling a little bit because we can't complete their financial roadmap if they don't share their documents. I'm banking that they will. Why? Because they always have. It's never been an issue after the value staircase. So with the couple minutes that we have left, I want to finish with another question. There is an issue that's another issue along this line. What does it mean to bring all your financial documents if it's a Zoom meeting? So if you're conducting the initial client interview and it's not face-to-face in your office, which is very easy, they bring their documents. Oftentimes, they bring it on a thumb drive, and that's fine. But I'm just saying they bring their documents physically with them. No problem. Some of you are trying to get them to upload documents in advance. I would say that could be a problem. And if that's the problem, that you're canceling or rescheduling these meetings because the day before they have failed to upload to the link you provided them, I would say that's silly. Just tell them to bring their documents and enforce the two rules. And if bringing the documents means physically bringing the documents, don't require them to upload documents if they could just as easily bring them. So, because maybe the issue is trust, you know, maybe they are going to share them with you after they talk to you for a minute and decide that they trust you. But if bringing the documents, if you're doing the initial client interview through Zoom or some, you know, using an online tool, you're going to have to ask me another question and say, well, how do you handle documents if it's a Zoom meeting? Or how do you, you know, if the question is more technical in nature or that you're used to doing it a certain way, like you upload documents and that's been a problem or an obstacle in the past, well, submit another question along that line and we'll deal with it because there's lots of responses to fixing that. If they don't seem very motivated, those four that I told you of his that were not, they did not have a significant financial issue, that he was aware of, I would just ask him, I always ask point blank, what would be the best outcome if you had a breakthrough of clarity on this issue that we're meeting about? And I can tell you, if they don't have a significant financial issue, often the most common reason they're meeting with me is because the two spouses are not on the same page financially. You know, they just have two different ways of points of view of looking at this. And so I just ask them, you know, what would be the best outcome if you had a breakthrough of clarity on that issue after our meeting? How important is this issue to your spouse? What are the obstacles? What have been the obstacles? I just kind of work the problem with them. I think it through and I try to get them to a point where imagine after this meeting, that's resolved. How much of a payoff would that be for you? In other words, how motivated are you at all to sit down and have this meeting? So I think it's okay. And I routinely do have this conversation just to do a motivation check with people, especially if they're rescheduling meetings. So there's that. Quick, question number two, how to select a subject matter expert that's up to the task? Okay. I have to kind of walk you through this. We've only got a couple of minutes here. Let me tell you what happened. In our flagship program, the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, we serve the whole team over in that other program. So, and you may not even be aware that we have a flagship program called the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, and that's fine. All I'm saying is in this program, we deal directly with the financial advisor. That's you. But over in our flagship program, we support the entire team. So we had in our methodology, and if you're new to the program, this all may be somewhat new to you, and you may not have gotten the modules that explain this, but in our structure, which is different than the financial services industry, We structure our team in a way so that you, as the trusted advisor, are the single simple point of contact for your client. And all these other issues, the client may have a tax accountant, certainly they have insurance agents and estate planning attorney and everything, but you're going to build a team. If you follow our advice, you're going to build a team so that you've got your own team. You've got a tax accountant, money manager, financial planner, and so forth. And you're going to make a deal with the client. You're going to make life simpler for them. And you're going to fill some gaps of things that are not currently the case in the client's life. And the client's going to have to, you know, get their mind around this, that it's going to be simpler for them. And that your role, rather than being a financial planner, you're going to be more of a financial orchestrator. And that you're going to be meeting with the client on a regular basis. And this is the 3-meeting process. But for those of you that have never seen this, the first 4 meetings are just to create the overarching plan. And then those 3 meetings at the bottom, they cycle every 4 months. So you have those 3 meetings at the bottom over and over and over again forever. All right. So you are orchestrating a team of subject matter experts in tax and financial planning and money management and all these things to coordinate with the client's financial people. So it's just a little bit different. And so your job is to establish what the client's expectations are. And so in this whole model, all I'm getting at is we got a call from a subject matter expert in our other program that I think was so important for you to hear how his attitude, because I think this is the greatest challenge you will face in truly comprehensive financial services. So if you implement this higher level of service that we're describing, and most advisors imagine the problem is going to be so different that advisors imagine the problem's all going to be about client acquisition. No, what I'm about to tell you is the biggest problem. It's continuing to be able to impress ideal clients in the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, 10th year. Okay. So it's a reality that acquiring ideal clients actually gets very easy when you are actually the only game in town, you're the best, then client acquisition becomes much easier. And when it comes to client service, what you'll learn is ideal clients are pretty easy to please in year one. You know, generally there's some things that need to be organized and you're giving them some new ideas. And they're harder to please in year two, and they are substantially harder to please in years three and on. Okay. So this is the biggest challenge in ongoing service to clients of this level. So, you know, my fee is $45,000 per client per year. So you think the client's not asking in their head, what have you done for me lately? If I'm going to be paying $45,000 year after year after year after year, what is it that the client is actually paying for, like that makes it worth it in their mind? Well, I keep saying it, but I say it in different ways. And what they're paying for is new, fresh ideas. And this is the only thing that's going to consistently exceed ideal clients' expectations, that your team is providing your client with new, fresh, what we call impressive ideas, okay? And this is why setting what we call the subject matter expert standard, that's why setting this standard is so critical. So what is the standard? Well, the standard is that you require of all your 5 subject matter experts, you say something like this: what I expect is for you to provide for each ideal client 5 impressive action items or recommendations every time we meet with that client, which is every 4 months. In other words, 3 times per year. And I'd like 5 new, fresh ideas that will impress the client. And I'm looking for 5 ideas, but let me tell you, there is a minimum standard. It's 3. So I need you to, at a minimum, provide 3 impressive action items or recommendations per year. That's 15 per year, minimum, for every ideal client. And I'll tell you, this is, so we had this financial planner contact us over in the financial, in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. And he was basically saying, Mark, do you have any tips or tricks regarding new ideas for long-term clients who don't have very complicated situations? Now, this is the nub of it. What do you do for clients that don't have particularly complicated situations? Like how are these five subject matter experts of yours going to keep coming up with 3 to 5 new impressive recommendations year after year after year? I mean, after a couple of years, haven't they shot all their bullets and given all their best advice? Well, that's exactly the problem. So the standard gets harder and harder over the years, was his point when he contacted me. My response to him, and this is over in the toolkit, so it has no relevance here, but I said, since the standard is 5 new ideas, minimum of 3, I recommend that you pick a specific client. So this is how we deal with subject matter experts supporting them over in the flagship program. And this is how you could deal with your SMEs likewise. Just don't talk about it in theory, talk about it in specifics. So pick a client that's coming in the next 60 days. And would you agree, and this is to the SME, that every ideal client could improve their financial affairs at any given point in time? There's something that needs improvement at any point in time. Is that agreed? And the SME, you're looking for yes, because if you hear no, they're probably either not skilled enough or not experienced enough. They just, you've gotten somebody on your team that's just hadn't been doing this long enough, or they just aren't skilled enough for this job. Because we're not here to train them. There are too many skilled professionals out there that do know how to do this. You don't have to screw around with SMEs that don't know how to do this. So you get them to agree that at some level, every client can improve their financial affairs at any given point. There's always an opportunity for maybe better personal financial organization. There's some aspect of their life. Maybe it's their own personal bookkeeping. Maybe it's the way they track their checks at their bank account or balance their checkbooks. Or maybe it's how they track their airline miles. Or maybe it's, it could be any of a, there's always something. Maybe it's their estate. Like, do they actually have an inventory of their estate that would be easy for their heirs to identify where things are and all that? Let's just say that if you're skilled and experienced enough as an SME in your field, there's always something that could be better organized. Or what about accelerating goals? You know, that could be an action item or recommendation. Like, here's an impressive idea of something you could do that would actually accelerate your goals. I'm assuming it's okay to achieve your goals sooner or even increase their goal. Like, here's something that if you do it a little bit different, it could be a bigger goal. Or just improving some aspect of clients' overall financial affairs. You get the SME to agree that there's always, I don't care how many times we've been through this client situation, there's always something that could be improved. And by the way, always remind them you're not limited to your area of expertise. In this case, he was a financial planner. But you know, if you see something in the tax area or the money management or estate planning, something else, you're not limited to your area. If you come up with a good, impressive idea, that's all I care about. It can be in any area. So usually what they need to do, and I've just been doing this so many years, I know the fix. They need to commit to doing a deeper dive into the client file, and or they don't know enough about the client. They don't know what their major purchases are coming up. They don't know, like, what's the most expensive thing that this client's going to be purchasing over the next 4 months or the next year. You know, oftentimes the advisor doesn't even know that. And so maybe it means getting a 3-way call with the client to interview them to kind of fish for issues. And usually it's both, but it's either a deep dive into the file where the SME gets to know the client better, or they need to jump on the phone and go through a series of questions to just kind of explore financial issues with them. And through one of those two areas, your SME we'll always be able to come up with something new for any client, no matter how simple their situation. And if not, then I guess there's the rare client that you've done all you can for them and you just, you know, disengage, or they just become an, kind of a simplified money management client. I've never had that. You know, my story is 91 ideal clients. I mean, those clients are still clients to this day. So, you know, how is it 15 years later after acquiring this client, I have five SMEs providing a minimum of 15 new impressive ideas for each of these 91 clients for 15 years? Well, it's because I hold the standard. So this idea of new, fresh ideas is why most initial SMEs wash out. So I can't tell you how many advisors say, building a team, Mark, no problem. I've got that covered. I've got an accountant that I've worked with over the years. I have an estate planning SME that I've worked with for years. No problem. I'll build that team fast. Okay. So now you've got your team. Well, they've got a certain number of arrows in their quiver. And guess what? If they're not skilled enough, then they're going to wash out. They'll be able to come up with a minimum of three, but what you're really looking for is five new impressive ideas every 4 months. And maybe they can keep up that pace for a year. Maybe they can keep up that pace for 2 years, but it's almost always the case that these initial SMEs that you've worked with for years wash out. They're just either unable or unwilling to meet this standard over some extended period of time. And so that's why you have to kind of gear your administrative manager up that we're going to have to fill these vacancies every so often, because eventually, you know, our team is not able to meet the standard. So it's your role to update your team on each ideal client's expectations. You're the one that has the relationship. You need to ask the client point blank, what do you expect from this relationship? And then that's your job to convey to the SMEs, all right? That will help them meet their standard. But even if it didn't, you need SMEs that are able to deliver 3 to 5 impressive action items and recommendations every 4 months forever. And what you're going to find is most can't. Like out of 50, you pick the field: accountants, money managers, estate planning lawyers, any SME field. I've been doing this long enough that I have found that if you interview 50 candidates, only one or two are going to be able or willing to meet this standard. Okay. So you've got to keep shopping. You're sitting there. People tell me all the time, Mark, why do you warn us that it's so hard to identify, you know, five skilled SMEs? It's because you have to interview 50 or 100 to find the one that's perfect. I mean, you know, it's just so few and far between that meet the standard. So leadership means enforcing this standard without fail. And that requires restating the team goal every time you meet with an SME. The team goal is, as a team, it's our objective as a team to consistently exceed every ideal client's expectations on an ongoing basis. So you need to get every team member to agree to contribute to that. It's not just you saying it. You need to get them to agree to that goal, and you need to remind them of it way more than you think you should. And I'm saying, you know, once a month is not too much. Like 12 times a year, yeah, it's very common that one SME needs to hear this team goal restated from you 12 times a year. Absolutely. And it requires conducting subject matter expert expectations conversations. These are performance reviews at least once every 4 months. That means 3 times a year, you're sitting down to enforce this single simple standard. And you go into that meeting where you have been tracking of all the recommendations that this SME has contributed as far as action items and recommendations for a client, you know, of all the ones they've created, here are the ones that you feel are impressive, or you agree with the SME that they are impressive recommendations. And so it's your opinion that matters. So did this SME produce, did they, first of all, give you the five you asked for? Are they just, or are they just always producing the minimum? Or, God forbid, are they under the minimum? Are they providing fewer than three new impressive action items and recommendations prior to every client progress meeting? Because if so, they're not meeting the standard, and it's up to you to enforce that. So that's it for this month. I just encourage you we do have one question before we wrap up here. Had Financial Roadmaps prospects tell me at the end of the meeting they were not going to bring all their documents because they didn't know me, wasn't quite sure how to respond. So we covered that. Hopefully, Daryl, we covered that. I don't know what you mean at the end of the meeting, because the documents are to be, you know, at the beginning of the meeting. I always confirm at the beginning of a financial roadmap the two rules. So I see you're both here. That's great. Please have a seat. And you've got all your documents with you. I'm just checking in. And if they say no, all I'm saying, Daryl, is having confirmed it three times, they're screwing with me. And now I think, you know, that now you know how I handle that. And I've just basically don't allow that. You know, if I confirmed it three times and they decided not to, then let's see, you're raising your Q&A. Not quite. Okay, so do you want to go live and I can turn your microphone on if you want to, or you can type in, let's see, answer live. Let's see how I do this. So I've got, let me see if I can unmute you, Daryl. Give me a second here. There we go. How about that? So Daryl, tell me the situation.
Hey, Mark, can you hear me?
Yep.
All right, outstanding. Hey, listen, thanks for taking the time. So we had completed the FRM. We were at the end. I did the whole, they needed time to talk about it. I walked away, came back, and then they asked me what would be the next steps. And I said, well, you didn't bring all your documents with you at this particular meeting. I need you to bring those documents in such that we can get started. And she said, well, I wasn't going to bring those documents in because, you know, I don't know you from Adam. And I didn't have a good response back as to what I should have said at that particular moment. They still decided not to move forward, at least not at this point. I'm supposed to call them back this week, but I probably won't. They're not an ideal client if I got to go through all that in my mind. But my point is, I just needed a better response back to why there was this trust issue at that particular moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And what I'm saying is check in. Like, all I'm saying is, here's how to avoid that. You confirm it three times, and then when they show up, you check right then at the beginning whether they have brought everything. And if you had brought this issue and made a point of it at the beginning of the meeting, do you think she would have said the same thing?
She might have, but what I've even within that, Mark, I've noticed that when I say, because I go through the prompt is the fact that you're here and you brought all your documents with you tells us you're serious about making smart choices with your money, right? Mm-hmm. And so people nod and say yes, but then at the end we discovered they didn't bring all the documents, or they brought a consolidated view, or they've.
Well, that's what I keep saying, Daryl. Confirm with them at the beginning of the meeting, and if she says yes, I've got them, but I'm not willing to share them yet, then that's fine, but. For the people that didn't bring them, like, and did she literally not bring them? Like, didn't have them with her?
She brought most of them, but she didn't bring the originals, right? So she had consolidated documents from her own spreadsheets.
Well, if they brought documents, then I would proceed. But if at the beginning they say, no, I didn't bring my documents. That's what I'm saying. That's a different type of person, and I would disengage, because the odds of someone, if you've confirmed it three times and they still kind of screw you, didn't they showed up despite you know, I mean, I always ask them, and I'm kind of humored at that point. I'm saying, you know, three times I confirmed how important this was. Why didn't you bring this up before, you know? And you know, I'm curious more than anything, but I'm telling you, if they didn't bring the documents after three times I've told them how important it is, I disengage proactively.
Okay.
If in her case, she says, yeah, I've got them, but I'm not sure I trust you yet. What I'm telling you, Daryl, is if you've gone through the value staircase and the goals, and she's still not willing to trust you, forget it. Write it off.
Right.
It's over.
Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
It's done. There's nothing you can do beyond that. That's going to ever, I mean, some people are just don't trust anybody's, and I can't think of anything more than you've gone way over backwards to do more than any advisor will to try to gain trust.
At this point, she had indeed, we had crossed the trust barrier. She was trusting at that point. All she was saying was the reason I didn't bring him in advance was that I didn't know you at that point. So now she's willing, she would have been willing to share them.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think by tuning up the front end with the three times and you'll fix that part.
Okay.
And I think she would have shared, if she'd have brought them, she would have shared them. Yeah.
Yes. Good. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, listen, everybody, have a great month. Do like Daryl. If you have questions, just submit them, you know, at any point during the month. And this time next month, we will catch up with whatever questions we miss. So until next month, I'm Mark Little.